Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good morning, Mr. Cleese.
Mike. Good morning, Mike. Good morning. What are we going to chat about, Mike?
Well, I would love to talk about the screening of Monty Python and the Holy Grail at the Hanover Theater in Worcester, Massachusetts, on February 15th.
I can tell you, we show the movie, and when the movie finishes, my daughter, who is very funny and very rude, which is excellent because most interviewers are much too respectful, which is very boring, she comes out and introduces me, and then she runs the proceedings, and she's very good at it because she's a stand-up comedian in real life. She's on YouTube, Camilla Cleese, if you want to see her. She comes out and people send questions electronically. I don't understand it, but with their phones, they send questions that appears on the screen of the iPad that she has. And as we go and as I answer questions, she picks out the least boring of the other questions that have been asked. And that way we have quite a good evening, because it's in the hands of the audience. If they want to talk about Mother Teresa or Trump or just about Python, it's fine. It's up to them. We are guided by their questions.
I see on the Hanover Theater's website it says that it is requested that the questions are as absurd or as ridiculous as possible.
That's absolutely right. I mean, sometimes the ridiculous ones are very funny. I was in Oslo, Norway, and a man stood up and said, "Mr. Cleese, may I ask you a serious question?" I said, "Yes." He said, "If you had to choose to be a component part of an aircraft, what component part of an aircraft would you choose to be?" I couldn't speak for about a minute. I thought it was, in the end, I had time to think. I said the joystick, of course.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But, well, I mean, that, or sometimes it's the other way. I mean, one woman in Florida said to me, "Mr. Cleese, serious question." I said, "Yes." She said, "Did the Queen kill Diana?"
Oh, my God.
And you never heard a silence like that. There were 2,000 people stunned into silence, and I was the only one laughing. So you never know what people are going to ask. But provided the boring thing is when they ask some questions, perfectly sensible, that was a boring answer, like, "Why is it called Monty Python?" I could answer that, but it's not very interesting. Or the other thing is they can they just say, what's the velocity of a swallow? Or they lines. Well, that's no good because it doesn't give you anywhere to go. But with my daughter up there sifting the questions, she takes those out, and then the questions, the nice rude ones, like, "Who do you hate most in the Python group?" or "Why can't you stay married?" Those sort of questions, they lead to fun.
Now, I've read and listened to a couple interviews. You seem to take delight when people get up and walk out of the Q&A section. Is that true?
I usually organize a round of applause.
Oh, really?
Because I think when people do feel strongly enough to walk out having paid for the ticket, I think we should acknowledge the fact that they have moral courage. Mm-hmm. And I often get the audience to applaud them. And sometimes they turn and bow, which makes it a rather nice transaction. But more often, the Trump people just either trudge out or they turn around and give the whole of the rest of the audience the finger, which is, I think, that's a sort of the tribal sign of the Trump supporters.
Well, if I could share just a quick story. I saw the Monty Python, The Meaning of Life, first when it came out in Manhattan. At a theater there, my father took me, and it was hilarious. The place was packed. People were laughing uncontrollably, yelling at the screen. And then the second time I watched it was in a very rural town in western Pennsylvania, Indiana, Pennsylvania, in a mall theater, and it was about half full. And as the movie progressed, more and more people got up and left. And by the, there's maybe a dozen people left in the theater by the end of the film. So I just thought, if, since you take delight in that, I wanted to share that story, the contrast there of the screening areas,
well, that's it. At the very beginning, the Python fans were not very numerous, nor very vocal, but there were enough of them, thank goodness, for the BBC to give us another series. That was all that mattered to us. In those days, you won't believe this, we weren't even told what the audience figures were. We didn't know how many people watched the program. The only thing that mattered, there was a thing called the AI, the Audience Appreciation Index. And that's to say, people who'd seen it would say whether they thought it was good or not. We always scored high on that, but we didn't have a very large following, and it developed very, very slowly, but of course 40 years is a long time to allow something like that to develop. And what happened is that Monty Python stayed much more alive in America than it has in England, because in England it's regarded a little bit as having sort of faded away. And somebody wrote an article in our silly left-wing paper, The Guardian, which is very shrill and not very intelligent, though it thinks it is, saying referring to Monty Python, they are 50-year-old jokes. Well, I said they don't really refer to William Shakespeare in his 400-year-old plays. Presumably, with age, they get worse. Otherwise, he wouldn't be writing this stuff. So the press has never really liked anything in England that's successful, because they're a very envious bunch and they want to cut everyone down to their size, which is very, very small indeed. But over here in America, there's much, much more enthusiasm for it, and that is very heartwarming.
It's heartwarming, and it's interesting to me because it's so very English. And I would assume, you know, Americans would be like, well, I don't really get some of this. But apparently it's snowballed over the decades. And, you know, to me, that's kind of curious.
It is, but there's still a lot of people who don't get it, but they are living basically in the flyover states, you know, so it doesn't affect anything. People ask about the American sense of humor and the British sense of humor. The point is, in America, there's two senses of humor. There's the one that understands irony, which is all the big cities and the coasts and the Great Lakes. And then there's the other part that doesn't understand irony at all, which is basically the red states.
Right.
And those are two completely different senses of humor, and indeed of philosophies, because you don't get many fundamentalists in the states where irony is understood.
I heard that you and the Monty Python guys, when you went in to pitch the idea for the television show, did not have any kind of plan at all, didn't even have a pitch. You kind of just walked into the BBC.
I know, it's true.
It's true. So you had nothing planned.
It's so astonishing.
What?
We had nothing planned. We hadn't even discussed it properly. And when the guy said, what do you propose to do, there was a silence. And then we sort of improvised. We said, well, you know, a comedy show with funny things sort of intended to make people laugh and jokes and gags and things. And he looked at us. Thought we were mad. And then he took this extraordinary risk. He said, oh, go away and make 13 programs.
Wow.
That would never happen now. You know, somebody just approached me to do some podcasts, but instead of saying, what would you like you to do, they want to know what it is that I'm going to do, because they sort of think, because they've got a big desk, that they understand audiences better than I do, and statistically that's improbable.
So when you went to pitch the Holy Grail, was it the same thing? Did you have a plan for Holy Grail when you went?
Yes,
okay.
We couldn't get anyone. We couldn't get anyone interested. We couldn't get anyone to give us money for Life of Brian. It was going to cost $3 million, £2 million. It was going to cost, and we couldn't get a single studio in the UK or in the US to put the money up. And of course, it was an artist. It was George Harrison who put the money up.
Wow.
He rang up Eric. Eric was a friend of his, gave him the script. He laughed so much he said he fell out of bed. And then he rang up and said, I'll put the money up. He said, I'll mortgage my house. And Eric said, this is wonderful. Why are you doing this? And George said, I want to see the movie.
That's such a great story.
Just extraordinary. And when we tried Life for, Holy Grail, we got it by getting together a group of rock groups. I can't remember them all because I don't know anything about rock music, but I think Pink Floyd was one of them.
Really?
And Jethro Tull.
Wow.
And Genesis and what was they called? Something, Chrysalis Records.
Yeah.
All
yeah.
the money that was put up came from rock bands who discovered that there was a favorable tax situation if they invested in movies.
I see. That's great,
Never
though.
Never from executives. Never, ever from executives. And that's why I have the statistical evidence. Anybody who doubts me, just read a book called The Drunkard's Walk by Leonard Mlodinow. And there's a few pages at the earlier part there about Hollywood. And nobody knows. Nobody ever knows what is going to succeed. But they're all frightened that they'll lose their jobs. So they go for the safest possible choice so that nobody can say you made a fool of yourself. You see what I mean? Mm. They go for the most conventional choices. But this is the way it's always been, that the people in charge think they know what they're doing. Actually, they don't know better than anyone. The artists have got a better chance, but even the artists don't really know whether it's going to work, but they have a better chance of guessing than the executives do.
It's so evident with the amount of reboots and remakes of older movies that they're willing to take less and less a chance.
Yeah, you see, I have a very funny idea for a movie. It's a light comedy about cannibalism.
Oh, great!
And it's called Yummy. And you know, if I could show it was based on a comic book, I'd probably get it made.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I can't believe, though he's a wonderful actor, that this guy who played the Joker is up for Best Actor. And the idea that a best actor could be in a comic book movie just strikes me as being totally absurd. But as you get older, you do begin to suspect that the world is much, much madder than you ever thought, you know. And I think the great thing about Python is it sort of reminds us that it's all pretty crazy, really. Somebody once said to me they love Python because they couldn't watch the news afterwards because they couldn't take it seriously. I think that's very helpful in this time of our lives.
Well, John Cleese, it's been an honor and a pleasure as a longtime fan. I'm looking forward to the the screening of Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Respectful nonsense. That's why we don't use radio personalities in the show, you see. That's why my daughter comes in and introduces everything. Because, of course, daughters are not respectful to husbands. Are not respectful to fathers. And that makes it much more entertaining.
Well, I have to express my gratitude because you've given me a lot of laughs over the years. So that's, I just want
to... Oh, that's lovely. When people say that, I get a little warm feeling around my heart because that's the nicest thing anyone can say to me.
Yeah. Well, February 15th, Hanover Theater, that is Valentine's Day weekend, as a matter of fact. So I think nothing...
Is it really?
Yeah, that's February 14th is Valentine's Day. So that weekend, a lot of people will be going out. I think nothing paves a path to romance and possible erotic adventures like a screening of Monty Python's The Holy Grail and a Q&A with John Cleese at the Hanover Theater. So,
well, that's right, because if you really laugh with someone, all the barriers come down.
Right, exactly. You got to get the date laughing, and then you're in, right?
Then you're in.
All right. Mr. Cleese, thank you very much for taking the time today.
You come and ask a rude question.
I will. I will be there with my ridiculous question.
Good. A ridiculous one. That's excellent.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.